Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, October 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10 minutes or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for episode 1001 of Bang the Book Radio. We got one guest on today's program. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. We're going to chat a ton of college football with him. Also take a look at Panthers, Redskins, and Chiefs, Patriots in the NFL. Got a late message early this morning that Tony George unable to join the show here today. An emergency popped up, so certainly wish Tony the best with whatever's going on there with him, but only one guest on the program today. However, I'll add a second segment at the end of today's show, taking a look at the NLCS between the Brewers and the Dodgers, and the ALCS between the Astros and the Red Sox. Give you some thoughts about hedging those MLB playoff futures. Also, some of my thoughts on how those series will play out, the sides that I like in those series, and so on. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. There's no reason to go anywhere else because we've got the best and brightest covering everything for you on a daily basis over there, including updated NHL picks for Thursday night's big card from Parker Michaels. Danny Vorg's updated NFL power ratings posted as well. My ALCS and NLCS series previews have been posted. My college football power ratings went up earlier on in the week. We've got a great article from David LeFerrier about teams using underclassmen here in college football. He's been doing that returning production series for us. Now he's taking a look, as we're about halfway through the season, at teams that are using a lot of underclassmen. So a very interesting article there. You definitely want to make sure that you check out. Alan Moody and Admir Aljic still doing a lot of stuff over there on a daily basis at bangthebook.com. Just go check it out. I promise that you won't be disappointed. Also, while you're there, free pick contests. Get involved in those. Sign up. Win some cash prizes. And, of course, our sportsbook reviews, including our look at DSI Sportsbook, where you can use that Bang100 promo code to get yourself a 100% deposit bonus at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, that is professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. Brad, how's it going today, brother?
It's going well. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Good to chat with you as well, as it always is here on the program. And let's go ahead and start with the NFL. I know that we've got a ton of college to get to, but with Tony unable to make the program here today, I do want to talk about the two games that I originally planned to discuss with him. So go ahead and start off our segment here with a couple of those NFL contests. And Brad, I guess overall, since we got a little bit of extra time here on the show with just the one guest, I promise I won't keep you too long. But overall here in the NFL, you know, we're now into week six. We've seen five games. We got a pretty good idea of what we're dealing with, but it appears that the odds makers do as well.
Oh, there's no question. Although, I mean, just when you think you have a lot of things figured out as far as the NFL, I think it's a true parity league for the most part. I mean, outside of traditionally, you know, obviously the last 15 years, the Patriots, and 15 years of misery for the Browns. But, you know, just when you think you got a lot of things figured out, sometimes you get results like Buffalo beating Minnesota, or hell, even the Bills winning another game last weekend when the money was significantly against them in the Tennessee game. But generally speaking, I would say, you know, be careful what you see last, because if there's anything that I do well in the NFL, it's, you know, when I'm handicapping, I like to look and see what the look ahead line was on Thursday, because if there's any sport that has a bigger overreaction, tell me about it, because I think you can make some money on it just because the public's more involved in NFL betting than any other sport. A lot of times you get that classic overreaction spots from what you just seen last Sunday.
I guess we'll throw a bone to our day of listeners here, or the ones that, you know, catch the show early in the afternoon, because this is the first time I've taken a chance to look at the NFL odds screen for today. I was writing up that Red Sox Astros preview, and I noticed that Philadelphia is down to a 2-point favorite here, five dimes as low as 1.5. Pinnacle still 2.5 for tonight's game against the Giants. What do you make of that line move here on game day?
You know, I have some really good NFL guys that I talk to, and that's probably why I have success. I just have some really good guys that understand the market and where stuff's going to move. And, you know, I got a text yesterday that said that this was likely to come off a three and move in the Giants' favor. A couple of injuries for Philadelphia, obviously, and they've struggled with injuries all year. They've taken their toll on them this season. Look, you look at the road team so far on Thursday night, 5 weeks into the season, 0-5 straight up, 0-4-1 against the number. These road teams are at a significant disadvantage. I'm not sure I want to go all in on the Eli bandwagon at this point. And keep in mind, the Eagles have won 16 of the last 19 games against the Giants. That's incredible the last 10 years. It's not like the Eagles have been a significant powerhouse. I mean, these two teams have pretty much been equal talent level for the last 10 years, and yet the Eagles 16-3 the last 19. That's stunning for me. I think if you got Giants +3, feel pretty good. And if you want to bet the Eagles, I would wait a little bit. You might even get better than 2.
Well, this is one of the things, too, and we've talked about this in the NFL, and I think it's one of the things that makes the NFL so challenging is that you have to make a lot of what would be perceived as bad bets in the NFL, taking teams like the Giants, taking really bad teams like Buffalo. Maybe Arizona winds up being the right side here this week against Minnesota. That's the thing that's really tough, I think, about the NFL is that the mental handicap in the NFL, getting your mind around the fact that you're going to have to take bad teams because those are the value sides in, as you mentioned, a very overreactionary betting market. It's just not easy to do. And this is an example of one of those games here tonight where nobody really wants to back the Giants. But as you mentioned, road teams doing a very poor job on Thursday night, Philadelphia really banged up. The problem is, and I think the biggest thing when it comes to the NFL, and this is certainly the biggest thing for me, that trust factor. It's hard to trust the Giants. It's hard to trust Cleveland. Maybe Miami is the right side this week, but it's hard to trust Miami too. That's just the nature of the beast in the NFL.
Yeah, it's something. I know you say bad teams a lot, and I get it. They're bad in record a lot. But are there really significantly bad teams in the NFL? I mean, when Buffalo can beat Minnesota, I mean, it's that one league where, I mean, really, what's the significant difference between the very best of the best and the worst of the worst? I would argue, compared to a lot of the sports, that gap is the closest between the best and the worst. So I guess I like to take advantage of it because, you got the same number of players on a roster, and it's the one sport where, hey, if you're not there mentally, just a little bit down a notch, I'm not saying you're not going to try hard. I mean, that's how you get injured if you're not trying hard. But if you're not locked in mentally, man, it's that one sport where if you're not dialed in like the Vikings were a few weeks ago, anything can happen.
All right, let's talk about game 257, 258 here. Carolina and Washington, both of these teams off of buys last weekend. Neither one of them looked particularly good. Carolina, a lot of problems with the Giants. Washington blown out on Monday Night Football by the New Orleans Saints. So a short week turnaround here for Washington. Of course, they are relatively healthy because they had that bye week. But still, one less day of preparation here to take on the Panthers. Seeing this line swing a little bit, Carolina opened the favorite -1. Swung to Washington -1 now. So not anything overly significant, just crossing through 0 in a flip favorite situation. What do you think about this one here in Landover on a Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, I would say it's one of the tougher games of the week. I mean, I'm supposed to like Washington here. And I know you're going to say, what do you mean supposed to like Washington here? They just got their ass kicked on Monday Night Football. And that's exactly why I should like Washington here. The last lasting memory of the Redskins was them, you know, obviously taking it on the chin against New Orleans last week. So I would say from a point spread aspect, the value should be on the Redskins. But, I mean, you talk about, you know, what to make of the Redskins and whatnot. I mean, obviously, they're one team that's had, obviously a topsy-turvy type of season. You know, on one hand, you know, they're dominating the Packers at home, although that doesn't look as great now after the Packers lost yet again against the Lions last week. And then they're getting crushed, obviously, on Monday night. And then on the flip side, you know, Carolina was in a good spot last week. Money came in against them, against the Giants, and they found themselves, down double digits. Should have lost the game if not for one of the longest field goals we've ever seen by a game winner. I mean, I think it's the longest since 1970 as far as the final play of the game. I wish I had a really strong lean on this one. I don't. Either team -1 sounds about right to me.
Yeah, and this is one of those games, too, where, you know, I really like Jay Gruden. And I really thought that Jay Gruden would have his team a little bit better prepared for that game against New Orleans. And obviously the Saints maybe had some kind of rallying moment with Drew Brees and knowing how close he was to the record. And it did seem like the Saints were a lot more engaged in that game than the Redskins were. But it's kind of got me thinking here, and this isn't really a handicapping angle for this game necessarily, but makes me kind of wonder here if not only do we overvalue the bye in the NFL, but if the bye is actually something of a detriment. I mean, I know it helps with healing players and getting guys, you know, back closer to 100%, but now, and maybe this is just recency bias, but, you know, we saw Carolina and Washington both look pretty bad coming out of the bye. You know, we'll see how the Bears look coming out of their bye this week. But it kind of feels to me like, you know, you don't want the bye this early in the season.
That's an excellent point, especially if you got a little bit of momentum. I would say, you know, especially I would say it could be a negative for the Bears. And that's one of the, you know, one of the reasons I'm leaning towards the Miami side this week. The fact that, you know, if you're coming off a big win, do you really want to take that time of the year to take a week off, and especially knowing that you're going to have 11, 12 games on the back end? Yeah, I'm not a huge fan, obviously, of the early bye. I mean, you look at the Panthers, had a big win against Cincinnati prior to the bye, and then came out a little bit flat. Yeah, and we saw that, obviously, with Washington. So I think that's a take that I haven't heard yet, at least this season, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I wouldn't want to bye after week three of the NFL season. I just wouldn't, knowing that I got 13 games left to go. That could be, I think, a negative as far as the mental aspect goes.
Well, and also with Chicago, too. I mean, their game going into the bye, they won 48-10, and Mitch Trubisky had the best game of his career in that situation. Of course, the team they played, Tampa Bay, also going into a bye, you'd like to think that they would come out a little bit motivated here against Atlanta this week, but you'll have to see. I mean, it's one of those things, too, where the most glaring example of it to me was the 2016 Eagles. Carson Wentz starts 3-0, looks really, really good. Everyone's kind of anointing this kid as, you know, the next big thing in the NFL. They have the week four bye, and then they look nothing like the same team for the next few weeks after that. So, again, I mean, maybe I'm cherry-picking some recent examples, letting some recency bias come into the mix here, but it is something I think worth watching. You know, with these week four, week five, week six buys, not just this year, but as we go forward as well.
Yep. Even in the college is, I think a lot of times the early buys are negative. You kind of want that sweet spot. I know it can't happen for everybody, but you want it in week five, week six, week seven. I'm sure any coach, any player would love to have that buy right around even this time of year, right around mid-October. As far as college and maybe the end of October with the NFL.
Well, and interestingly enough, Chicago up to 3.5 out there in the marketplace now at several places, including Pinnacle and Bookmakers. So that's a sharper type of line move there. Also, Tampa Bay now down to 3 from 3.5. So both teams coming off of buys, getting a little bit of steam here early Thursday morning. All right, let's talk about a game that everyone's going to pay attention to, everybody's going to watch, and probably be invested in as well. Game 275-276, Kansas City and New England. Jacksonville, a popular side last week. Fading Kansas City was pretty popular on Monday Night Football against Denver. Kansas City covered the closing number in that game against Denver. Didn't cover if you got Denver early on in the week. So, again, value of the number in the NFL. Kansas City wins and covers last week over Jacksonville. What do they do this week against the New England Patriots, who are a 3.5-point home favorite?
I like the Patriots here. I just think it's a bad spot for the Chiefs. I mean, it is their fourth road game in 6 weeks. That's tough. The Patriots, third straight home game, extra time to prep after the Colts. Really didn't extend a lot of effort in each of the last two games. Patriots getting Edelman back, getting Gordon more into the flow of things. I think the Patriots obviously are ascending. And plus, I don't think your stock's any higher than what Kansas City is right now. I just can't trust when you go on the road and you got arguably the worst defense. I mean, they've given up more yards to the Chiefs in the first five games of the season than any team in the history of the NFL, and yet they're 5-0. So kudos to Patrick Mahomes. Kudos to Andy Reid. I mean, obviously they got it going on the offensive side of the ball, but to go on the road with one of the worst defenses, not only this season, but historically speaking. New England, revenge spot. Last year they were embarrassed at home against the Chiefs. You could argue on one hand revenge. You could also argue, hey, maybe the Chiefs offensively, schematically, you know, gave a slower New England defense some fits. That could be the case again here, but I got to play the spot. I think it's a home run spot for New England. Give me the Pats laying at 3.5.
All right, so let me ask you this here. I mean, in terms of looking at the NFL market, and again, we are seeing some movement here. And in fact, I see Chicago up to 4 at my bookie now. So we've got maybe some steam chasers or something like that kind of piling on that number. But it does look like we've got kind of a moving day here today on Thursday as we're getting some more clarity with practice reports, things of that sort. Kansas City, 5-0, Pat Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, those fantasy football players that the public loves. But they're going against New England, who has been a great bet for 15 years now, basically. Where does this number go? I mean, do we see 4? Do you think it's 3.5? What do you think?
It's a great call. And let me just say, you know, a lot of times Thursday's moving day, not just practice reports, but also limit sizes get bigger. And a lot of times the syndicates and whatnot aren't willing to show their hand at lower limits. And a lot of books, at least here in Vegas, are willing to, you know, instead of taking $10,000 bets, they are willing to take, you know, $50,000 bets, or at least you can get down a heck of a lot more as you go later in the week. In this particular case, that's a good one. You got two very public teams. I'm not sure. I think 3.5 is a pretty solid number. I think if you're a real big Chiefs backer, you'd love to take the hook. I think the 3.5, you know, prevents – you know, New England, I think if it's 3, obviously a lot more people be on the New England side with it being at home. I think it's a pretty solid number, Adam. I don't see it moving too much. I'd be stunned if the Chiefs, if the game went down to 3, to be honest. I think it's more likely, you know, 52% chance it goes to 4 compared to coming down to 3.
One last note about this game here. This total's now up to 60 at Pinnacle. I presume we get some kind of sharp buyback here, just because this would be the first regular season game since 2000 with a total of 60 or higher. That was the 49ers and Rams total 62 in week 9 of the 2000 season. That game ended 34-24, so it did stay under the total. We had a playoff game January 22nd, 2017, Falcons-Packers. It was a total of 60.5. That one did go over 44-21. But again, we're seeing very, very high regular season totals here, not just because we've got some skeleton defense being played, but also, of course, the much talked about penalties, specifically the 15 yarders for roughing the passers. So definitely gonna be interested to see where this total goes, because we know public money, doesn't matter what the number, gonna come in on the over for this game. Will we get that sharp buyback? Brad, what do you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, the sharper guys that have been trying to bet unders so far this season have not had a lot of luck. I mean, the reality is in today's day and age of the NFL, I mean, we're on pace to obviously smash the all-time scoring record for average points per game. I would love to line up and play an under on a historically high total. I mean, I did so in a Penn State-Ohio State game this year, but in this particular case, I'm going to check the weather report. If I get a little wind, I mean, we're in mid-October, it's at Foxborough. I get a little wind in the forecast, and maybe it's just over 10 miles an hour, then maybe I'll jump in. But right now, I'm not, you know, anxious to get off the phone with you and run to the ticket window and bet the under in this one. I think it's deservedly to be up there among being an historic total.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, I will probably wind up seeing another 60 here at some point during the NFL season, especially the way that things are going. But as you mentioned, weather going to start to be a big factor in the NFL, wind particularly. People think rain and snow, but it is wind that you want to focus on. By the way, early forecast, temperatures around 50, low winds for this game. So it doesn't seem like the weather should be that much of a factor. By the way, speaking of weather, snow expected in Denver on Sunday, which is kind of crazy to think about, I guess. But we'll see how that affects Jared Goff and the Los Angeles Rams. All right, let's chat college football here. We have plenty of games I want to get to on the college football side of things, and let's go ahead and dive right in. We'll start with game 109-110, South Florida and Tulsa. This one's a Friday night affair in the AAC. Line came out a little bit late for this one, so we didn't talk about it with Kyle Hunter early in the week, but we'll check on it here now. South Florida, a 7-point favorite, and a lot of shops, a couple still sitting 7.5.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards the South Florida side here in this one, and I'm not a huge Charlie Strong fan. I mean, I think he's in a good spot there at South Florida as far as, you know, what fits him best. But, you know, they're sitting there unbeaten. But I'm not, you know, sitting here, you know, banging on the table saying that this is a team that it really should be in the top 25, been impressive. Blake Barnett's been impressive so far this season. That's something I really didn't grasp, you know, when I was analyzing South Florida prior to the season, how good he would be. He's been a journeyman his entire career as far as, like, transferring 3-4 different schools. Tulsa had that, you know, kind of game, that weird one last Thursday night against Houston where they're up 26-17 in the fourth quarter, somehow almost blow the cover as, a 17-point underdog. They got a true freshman at quarterback. I just that was a game that Tulsa was aided by turnovers, the fact that it was close there early. Lean on South Florida for me. Just offensively got so many more weapons. They have a little bit more athletes on the defense side of the ball. And also, I'll have to look at the weather here. I'm a little surprised total is only 61.5. I probably like the over more than I like South Florida.
And this is one of those instances, too. I mean, you look at this South Florida team. They've had some very strange box scores this year. They beat Georgia Tech by 11, had two kick return touchdowns in that game by the same player, but they were outgained by almost 180 yards in that game against Georgia Tech. Then they play Illinois, fail to cover. They're actually losing that game 19-7 after three quarters. They outgained the Illini 626-380 in that game. They just had a bunch of penalty problems. Then East Carolina, they win 20-13, but have less than 300 yards of offense. So I have no, and it's rare in week seven to say, I don't know what a team is. I don't know what South Florida is. I mean, they're Jekyll and Hyde week in and week out.
Makes it awfully tough to trust them here, especially as a touchdown road favorite in a unique travel spot. I'll have to go through it. How many trips have they made to Tulsa since joining the league? I would argue probably none. So they're not traveling to Oklahoma too often for these players. So maybe one time or so in the past, but a little bit unique travel spot for them, and obviously one day less up travel. So a little bit of a negative there. Again, if you're going to do anything, I would say more over. Even in the games, you mentioned it, a couple of games where they're only allowing 13 points to East Carolina, they're still giving up 400 yards. Usually that'll average out when it's all said and done.
They played in Tulsa in 2014. South Florida won that game 38-30. They played in Tampa last year. South Florida won 27-20. So a couple close games, but only two data points there in this series between these AAC rivals. I guess we'll call them rivals. AAC foes, I guess. All right, let's go to game 125-126 here as we transition over to Saturday afternoon. Purdue laying 10.5 off a bye against Illinois. This is a game that kind of caught my attention a little bit where I do like the heavy road chalk in this spot.
Yeah, I mean, the first gut instinct I had, 10.5 on the road. I mean, when's the last time Purdue's been laying that? I looked it up, 2007, the last time Purdue laid double digits or spread this big. But they do come in off a bye. I would say this. I've been following Purdue a lot. I don't know what it is. Just I've almost seen all their games. I've had just a few bets, but just the way my TV's been looking at. Yeah, I think the buy sign was on. Here's a team that suffered three close losses early on in the season. Coin flip games. Could have been 0-3 like they were. Could have been 2-1, 3-0 if things worked out in a different manner. But I was impressed with their performance on the road in Nebraska. I get it, Nebraska sucks this year, but still for Purdue to go in there and did what they did. David Blau's been fantastic the last three games, even going back to the loss against Missouri. I think Illinois got right last week, but, you know, I mean, it's Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers is this year, Rutgers is what Kansas has been. I mean, keep in mind, Kansas beat Rutgers by 40 earlier this year. I think you got the better team. They're rested. Yeah, not often that I want to lay 10.5, but and I'm not going to have an Illinois ticket, obviously, but if you lean anyway in this one, it'd be on Purdue.
I mean, my number is only 12.5 here, so this isn't necessarily a power ratings type of play for me, but Illinois last week snapping a 13-game losing streak in Big Ten play. I mean, it seems like to me like there has to be some kind of a little bit of a letdown factor there. I know they're taking on a Purdue team. It's in their division, all that type of thing, but still, to get that win and to do so on the road and do so convincingly kind of feels like a bad spot for the Illini here to me. Also, when they've played any kind of team with a pulse, they've not looked very good. That UCF game, they were up, as I mentioned, 19-7, but got badly outgained, decimated by Penn State at home. Not that that's a big surprise, but you know, Illinois wins. Kent State, who's a lot better than we thought, I will say that, but they had all kinds of problems in that game. Western Illinois, and then Rutgers, who's a bottom 20 type of team this year. So I guess it's not a great spot for the Illini. I do like Purdue, but that's a pretty eye-opening stat there about not being that big of a road favorite in over a decade.
Yeah, and look, you can't blindly play on outliers like that. But I like looking them up because what happens with the outliers, a lot of times you find value going against it. I don't know if this is necessarily the best spot to do so because, obviously, Purdue coming off a bye, feeling pretty confident, still got a chance for a bowl even after an 0-3 start. But you'll see that if you subscribe to my newsletter, you'll see a lot of those because we've seen that, lines are sharper. So teams that were laying 7 in the past are laying 10. So a lot of times you get a lot of outliers from week to week.
Well, I talked about this a little bit earlier in the week. I can't remember who I talked about it with, but when you look at the rest of the slate for Purdue, if they want to get to a bye game, this is effectively a must-win. Ohio State at home next week, at Sparty on the 27th, Iowa on the 3rd at home, at Minnesota on the 10th, Wisconsin at home on the 17th, at Indiana on the 24th. It's not easy to find three wins there, and all three of the games they're most likely to win, I would say Illinois, Minnesota, and then Indiana at the end of the year, all on the road. So Purdue really has to win this game.
Yeah, and I think what's going to happen is they're going to go back to the missed opportunities in the first 3 weeks of the season and say, hey, if we just would have won one of those games, we'd be sitting here in a bowl game. But I'll say this, even if they go 4-8, 5-7, if you're looking for a team already to buy in 2019, I wouldn't mind buying the Boilermakers, even though they're going to lose quarterback.
Oh, so we lost Brad Powers here for today's show. We'll get him to call back in, and we should have everything all squared away here. But again, good thought there on buying Purdue for 2019 as well. And again, it's never too early to start putting those notes in the back of your mind. Start thinking about those things a little bit, because those are betting angles that can help you when that season win total market opens. What about 7 months or so from now? So welcome Brad back to the program here. And Brad, let's move on to game 129-130 in the ACC between Duke and Georgia Tech. I wanted to talk about this game because I know that you're going to have a lot of good numbers and a lot of good thoughts for us on David Cutcliffe against the option. Blue Devils, a 3-point dog, but extra juice on that 3.
Yeah, I like Duke here. You talked about the numbers. First and foremost, they're coming off a bye, extra time to prep for the option advantage. Duke, they've excelled in defending the option. David Cutcliffe, 8-1 against the numbers last 9 games against option teams, including 4 straight covers in this series by 16 points per game, 3 outright wins as an underdog. They've already seen the option earlier this year, 20-point win and cover against Army. Army's turned out to be a pretty good team yet again under Monk and their head coach. Jones, the quarterback for Duke, should be healthier after a bye week. And I don't mind selling Georgia Tech after back-to-back games where they put 60-plus points on the board. I like the Blue Devils to make it 5 straight covers here. It's one of my top plays of the week.
All right, so we didn't leave a whole lot of doubt there in that one. So move to another game in the ACC, game 133-134. It's a pretty interesting line, and the line movement, albeit small, is pretty interesting to me here too. 133-134, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, down from 6 to 5.5. The thing that makes this line move a little bit interesting to me, and again, not crossing a key number or anything like that, is that we don't have a whole lot of really good data points about North Carolina this year between suspension, had a game canceled, have played 3 tricky road games at Cal, at East Carolina, since East Carolina is a very strange team this year, and then at Miami. What do you think about this one? This is a hard game for me to handicap.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think my numbers call Virginia Tech, but the spot calls North Carolina. They're fresh off a bye. They got most of their players back from suspension. They had a misleading blowout loss against Miami in their last game. They allowed not one, not two, but 3 defensive touchdowns. They had 6 turnovers, I believe, in that one. So I would say the spot and the misleading loss against Miami says North Carolina. But I don't think Virginia Tech's as bad as what people think. I get they just got blown out at home against Notre Dame, but they moved the football up and down the field against Notre Dame's defense. They were just outclassed in the second half. If anything, push comes to shove, even though my number is closer to a full touchdown, I would say North Carolina plus the points is my lean here.
I don't know what Virginia Tech is. I mean, it's one of those things, too, where, you know, when you talked about this last week, I think when we broke down Virginia Tech and Notre Dame, the quarterback that's come in for Jackson has actually played really well. I think Willis is his name. He's actually played really well. But this is a team that is so devoid of defensive playmakers right now with the suspensions and the injuries and the things of that sort to that side of the ball for Bud Foster. But also, North Carolina can't really exploit that as much as some of these other teams have. So really, really tough game. This is one that makes me really thankful that we've got 55 or 60 college football games every weekend.
Yeah, the advantage the book has over you is you got to lay 110, but the advantage you have over the books, you can pick which game is the bet. When you got 50-some games, it's better to pass. You don't have to get involved in every game. You don't have to bet the board.
All right, let's talk about this Middle Tennessee and FIU game here, game 143-144. Very fascinating line movement here a little bit. Florida International open -2.5. We got down to pick. Now we're back up to 2.5 or 3 here. This is a pretty good little Conference USA game.
Yeah, I would say the biggest difference between my power ratings and the market this week is this game. And I'm anxious to see what your number is because you're Mr. Middle Tennessee. I think they're going to give you an honorary degree from Murfreesboro there, down there. I like Middle Tennessee, although the spot says FIU. I mean, Middle Tennessee's on the road again after, Willie Nelson on the road again after beating and pulling an outright upset against Marshall last week. And FIU comes in fresh off a bye. Butch Davis is doing it again. Here was one of the least experienced teams in the country coming in. He's recruited very well, but a lot of those players are just freshmen and sophomores. But they had a misleading game against Miami. That was one where they couldn't move the football at all. Couldn't even get first downs. But in the fourth quarter, pulled off 17 points to make that final more respectable. I got to go with my number here. And, again, it's the biggest disparity this week. I'm going to take Middle Tennessee plus the points. I think wrong team favored.
My biggest disparity this week is Cal and UCLA. I've got that one nowhere near what the market has it. In this one, though, I've got Middle Tennessee -2. So I presume you and I are kind of in the same ballpark here when it comes to this game. And, I don't know. The thing for me is I've been, as you mentioned, I've been high on Middle Tennessee for, 4 or 5 years in a row probably at this point in time. And every year they've let me down in some way, shape, or form. This year, I had them a little bit lower. The two games they've lost, Vanderbilt in the opener, we talked about that game. We all know how Vanderbilt really gets up for that one. And then Georgia, and a lot of Conference USA group of five types of teams are going to get blown out by Georgia. Beat FAU, win on the road at Marshall. Can I trust this team to play up to its level 3 times in a row? That's the hard part I have here and why I haven't fired, even though if I can get a +3 out there, I got the 5-point overlay. I have to like that from a power rating standpoint. But I've been burned by MTSU so much that I don't know if I can trust them to hold up their end of the bargain 3 times in a row.
Yeah, and I get that. But I'll say this. If you're looking for Middle Tennessee to win Conference USA, a couple major hurdles out of their way beating Florida Atlantic and Marshall. They win this one. Who's going to beat them in Conference USA? They still got a road trip in non-conference to Kentucky, but Charlotte, Old Dominion, West Kentucky, UTEP, they do host UAB. They get by this one. I'm not saying they can punch their tickets to the Conference USA championship game, but you can start warming up the bus.
I'll tell you what, man. That UAB game in the final week there on November 24th could wind up being really interesting because those two teams might play again the next week for the Conference USA championship game. So that, especially with the way that it's setting up now, because as you mentioned, Middle Tennessee, tiebreaker over Marshall, tiebreaker over FAU. They win this game, they're 3-0. Everybody else in the East has a loss. So, yeah, that's definitely set up to be an interesting game there on November 24th with neither team really wanting to show a whole lot, having to play for a much bigger prize the following week. All right, let's talk about a couple of big-time programs here. Game 159-160, Washington's a 3-point favorite in Eugene to take on the Oregon Ducks. Really don't need a whole lot of buildup for a game like this.
No, you don't, and it's probably one of the top 3-4 games of the weekend. I'm just not buying Washington. They haven't looked right. And, you know, I go back to the Auburn opener. Hey, that was, you know, a good solid performance from Washington. Just couldn't get it done in the red zone. Six trips inside the 15, only got, I think, scored one touchdown. I mean, the reality is Auburn stinks. And Washington might be, you know, average. I mean, by average, I mean, compared to what we at least thought coming in the season, I wouldn't put Washington as a clear-cut top five, top six team in the country. I don't think anyone would at this point. Oregon, a nice spot for them. They're fresh off a bye. Should be unbeaten. You know, the Stanford collapse, you could say a multitude of plays went against them just for them to lose that game. Washington's back-to-back road. Really struggled with the UCLA last week. Oregon used to – it was an auto play on Oregon in a series for so long. They won and covered 12 straight. The last 2 years have been advantage Washington and then some, winning by 49 and 35 points. But I got to play the spot here. Give me Oregon plus the field goal.
I got this one, Washington minus one, and I'm not a big believer in the Huskies either. I mean, I completely agree with you. They got the big blowout win over BYU, but there's just something about this team that doesn't look right. The offense is not explosive at all. The defense is still very good. And if they win this game, it'll be because of the defense. But Washington just doesn't have that same feeling like you mentioned. Jake Browning's been a guy I think it has regressed over the course of his college career. I mean, 2 years ago, the guy threw 43 touchdown passes. I don't think he has that anywhere close to that combined since. So, you know, Washington is a team that I don't have a whole lot of trust for. Oregon is interesting because they gave that game against Stanford away and some crazy things happened, and we all know that. But, man, they looked prepared. They looked ready to go. And that was a big question about Mario Cristobal coming into the season was, is he the right fit for this type of program? Yeah, they lost the game, but they were up 24-7 in the first half, looked really good in the process. Justin Herbert looked great in that game. I think you got to trust the Ducks, if anything, here.
Yeah, and let's talk line value. If they hold on to beat Stanford, and look, there was two different points in that game that had a 99% chance to win the game. What is this line if they're unbeaten? Is it pick? Is Oregon slightly favored? If you're looking identifying, you know, where to, you know, find value in the marketplace, a lot of times just if you change one or two plays in a game or one play in each game and it's a couple games, where would the line be? And I got to think this line is pick 'em if Oregon's unbeaten at home and didn't blow the game against Stanford.
No, that's an excellent point. I completely agree with that. So, yeah, hey, maybe this is Oregon's kind of coming out party. Maybe we get a little bit of chaos here in the Pac-12 North if Oregon does take care of business in this one. How about we go to another premier game here, 169-170, Wisconsin and Michigan. If you haven't checked this number in a little while, you're probably going to be surprised to see that it's as high as 9.5 in the market, with the Wolverines getting a lot of steam here in the middle of the week.
Yeah, I liked Wisconsin earlier in the week, but the more I talk to people, I think I'm on the wrong side of that one. I'm just historically speaking, here's my thought process is, Michigan has struggled against, you know, top 15, top 20 teams under Harbaugh. They just have. Even against Northwestern, their offense struggled. Against teams that have a pulse defensively, Michigan's offense under Jim Harbaugh just – it's been a tough time for them to get any margin. The problem is, and maybe what I had wrong in the handicap early in the week, is Wisconsin might not have a pulse defensively. I mean, cluster injuries in the secondary for them. Although I'll say this, 33 Big Ten road games for Wisconsin, zero. Zero is the amount of times that they've lost by more than a touchdown. Last 33 times they went on the road in conference play. Still lean with the Badgers, but at this point, if you're looking at, you like, really like Wisconsin, hold the fort for a little bit. I would say you might be able to find a 10 later in the week. And keep in mind, Wisconsin's own Michigan this century, they covered, they're 9-1-1 against the number against the Wolverines.
Well, then, I mean, is that your point of resistance? I mean, if this gets to 10, do you feel like you have to take it?
I might have earlier tickets on Wisconsin. This is one where,
okay,
egg on the face. Yeah, I just misidentified the marketplace. I mean, sometimes you spend numbers early on in the week. I mean, you're going to make a mistake. Look, and people aren't perfect. I mean, that's why this is more art than science a lot of times. But when I'm making bets early in the week, it's just pure numbers. And My numbers, obviously, when there's 55 games on a Saturday, you don't go through every single game with a fine-tooth comb like you can on Monday and Tuesday. That's why I love handicapping football, because you got an entire week to prep for the upcoming game. In this particular case, I just didn't identify those injuries in Wisconsin. But I'll also say this. Is Michigan the type of team that's going to be able to take advantage in the vertical passing game? We'll see. I mean, Harbaugh in these types of games prefers to run the football and be conservative. And if that's the case, that's going to play in the strength of Wisconsin's defense, at least at this point.
I mean, the cluster injuries thing is one thing. I think this is more of a case of a lot of people are probably wondering how Wisconsin moves the football here. I mean, 6.2 yards per carry.
Good point.
Kind of that Taylor has been terrific. I don't know if Alex Hornibrook against this Michigan defense can actually move the football. So it's one of those things to me where I don't know if this is – I think this is more of a fade of Wisconsin's offense than it is a fade of anything else. And, I mean, then again, as I say that, this total has gone up a little bit from 47 in the middle of the week up to 49, which would imply someone's going to move the football here in this game. Maybe it's Michigan. I don't know. But it should be an interesting game there, to say the least, up in Ann Arbor. All right, let's go to game 177-178, Southern Miss, North Texas. I will tell you, I will be very honest and upfront about this. I've had no idea how to rate Southern Miss about 3 years in a row. It just feels like there's that one team or a couple of teams that I just never seem to get right. Southern Miss is one of them, and they're taking on North Texas here this week with the mean green anywhere from 8.5 to 9.5 in the market.
Yeah, tough game for me to handicap. I really don't have a strong leaner like it in this one. I mean, one of the biggest head scratching, you talk about Southern Miss at having a tough time grasping them. How do you grasp the final in the North Texas UTEP game last week? UTEP playing with a backup quarterback, haven't won a single game since 2016. I mean, North Texas, you thought would play out with their hair on fire after a loss against Louisiana Tech. They're nearly a 4-touchdown favorite, and that was a legitimate field goal type of game there. I mean, the mean green only outgained UTEP by 11 yards. Mason Fine was a little bit banged up at the end of the La Tech game. I didn't actually watch the North Texas UTEP game. I don't get that specific channel if it even was on TV. I'm anxious to see if he's not looking 100% healthy. Southern Miss does come in fresh off a bye. I don't have a strong one here. My number is right around the current market number. This is one you put in your back pocket, and actually it's going to mean a lot as far as the West Division standings go.
I will say this. I mean, I know North Texas didn't look good last week, but that's about three good performances in a row from UTEP. They're not 130th in my power ratings anymore for the first time since probably the middle of 2016 or so.
Wow. Still there for me, but they are very close. I'm anxious to see who is the bottom team.
I believe it's UConn. I'll double check. Yeah, it's UConn. I mean,
yeah,
UConn's
there you go.
Defense,
yeah,
defense is incredibly bad. I don't know how you get any worse defensively than what they've
done this year.
Yeah,
UConn is the team that's right there at the bottom. I agree with you there. Yeah, UConn's defense, you talk about worst in the country this year, they're on pace to be by far the worst defense in the history of college football.
Well, and Randy Edsall's going to walk out when somebody asks in his press conference about making a change at defensive coordinator. So, I don't think it's going to get any better for them. I mean, Memphis didn't hang 100, but I'm sure that they really wanted to try. All right, in any event, let's move on here to another Big Ten game, 179-180, Nebraska and Northwestern. You want to talk about line moves. How often have we seen a five-point line move on a side in week 7 of the college football season that's not directly correlated to a bunch of injuries or suspensions?
Yeah. I thought the money would come in on Nebraska a little bit. We saw the money come in on them against Wisconsin last week. It's always tough when you first see that the big line move. Is this a fade against Wisconsin? Is it a play on Nebraska? Probably a little bit of both, because we're seeing a lot of money come in again against Wisconsin this week in the Michigan matchup. We just talked about it. I guess the buy sign's on for Nebraska. I'm not as optimistic as the marketplace the last couple of weeks. They're still last in the country in penalties. They got to clean that up. They still haven't. Every single game. And pretty much they're in that 10-11 penalty range. Northwestern's pretty buttoned up. Look, obviously they're hurting without their running back, Larkin. Only 8 rushing yards last week, but still outright upset win. There'll be a lot of Huskers fans in the crowd there in Chicago. I would say that's a destination trip. If you're going to make one trip in the Big Ten, a lot of times, why not go see a great city like Chicago? At the current number, I got to play the number. I got Northwestern closer to a touchdown favorite here. I'll take the Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, this is one, and you know we've had a bit of a difference of opinion on Northwestern the last couple of weeks. I mean, I love Northwestern against Michigan. Had that number much different than the market Northwestern covered. Love Northwestern last week. Had it 10.5. Market was 7.5. They went outright. I had this one Northwestern 10. So I'm obviously way off now from where the number is in the marketplace, but I was right around the open. So I guess, you know, I mean, I'm probably a little bit too high on Northwestern still, but maybe Nebraska is a team that does need to get moved up in the power ratings here. You have to think, now that we're in the middle of the season, Scott Frost starts to do something different with this team to the point where they get a little bit more consistent. You know, they've actually outgained several opponents this year, just haven't been able to, you know, whether it's because of turnovers or penalties, like you mentioned, just haven't paid attention to detail enough to get a victory. Maybe this is the one, especially against the Northwestern team, so one-dimensional on offense right now. With Larkin and that, you know, very abrupt retirement, and certainly can understand why he retired. But, you know, again, their running game has just not been there for Northwestern ever since. Hard to see it being there this week as well. We'll stay in the Big Ten, 181-182, Iowa, Indiana. Iowa down from 6 to predominantly 5.5 out there in the market.
Yeah, the number's about right for me, and I was a big Iowa supporter last week against Minnesota. It was one of my top plays of the week. You know, Iowa, I don't think a lot of people look at this one, but, man, they are really good on the road, especially when the expectation is they're going to win. Everyone thinks about Kinnick Stadium, the night games, the upsets over the Buckeyes, Michigan, close loss against Penn State and whatnot in the last couple of years. But on the road as a favorite, they're now 16-0 straight up, 14-1-1 against the number. Last 16 times they've been on the road, including a win and cover last week. So they take care of business on the road. Why? Because they're buttoned up, don't turn the football over. They're not high variance. They play good defense. They run the football. Look, if you could have laid – there were some early numbers last week, Minnesota, where it was 4, 4.5, 5. I know it went all the way – went up to a touchdown, but would you rather lay a touchdown against Minnesota on the road, or would you rather lay, you know, 5.5 against an Indiana team that I think is far superior to Minnesota? So I think – there's not clearly as much value as what there was Iowa on the road last weekend. Slight lean on the Hawkeyes, but I won't have a big bet here.
All right, let's move to game 183-184, UCF and Memphis. Double revenge spot for the Tigers. Lost in the regular season, lost in the conference championship game, which had 117 points, I think, and almost 1,500 yards, something like that. UCF favored by 4.5 here this week. We've seen Memphis steam week in and week out this season, and we're not seeing it this week.
Oh, yeah. And that probably tells you that, you know, obviously the market likes Central Florida. And maybe not likes, but thinks highly of Central Florida. And the question I have, too, for Central, if you're looking to back Central Florida, the question I would have is first road trip since August 30th because of the hurricane game that was canceled against North Carolina on the road. So first road trip in a long time for UCF. How are they going to handle that one? Should be a relatively good atmosphere in the Liberty Bowl. And Central Florida, I look at spots in particular games this year. I mean, they gave up 300-plus rushing yards to FAU. On the flip side, you know, Memphis, nation's leading rusher, and Darrell Henderson, who had 934 yards this weekend or this year. I would lean on the Memphis side here, plus the points. Not going to be one of my stronger bets of the week, but that's where my lean is.
I've been pretty high on Memphis this year. I mean, I haven't found a ton of line value where they've been steamed in a lot of games, but I am pretty high on them. I've got this one, Memphis plus one, so I'm a little bit lower than the market, certainly, and we're dabbling around key numbers. But the thing about this game, really for both teams, is they've both played schedules in the 140s and the 150s per Sagarin. So they're both stepping up in class here simultaneously. Memphis is only two losses, both to option teams. Moved the ball very well against Navy, just couldn't win that game. So that's what I'm kind of curious about is how they step up in class playing somebody comparable. And I do think these two teams are very comparable to each other. I don't know which one I trust. Is that a spot where I want to trust the more established coaching staff that's been there, like with Memphis? or do I want to take the team that probably has the higher ceiling and is the better team overall in Central Florida? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, and that's a question you're going to have to ask. And look, double revenge sounds nice, but the reason why sometimes a team wins two games over you, and obviously the first matchup last year was a blowout for UCF. The numbers are close for me just to lean on Memphis because I just think that matchup at the line of scrimmage.
All right, we'll move on to a game that came by listener request here. This one's going to be Tennessee against Auburn, 185-186, down from 18 to 15, pretty much market-wide. Bookmaker now down to 14.5, a couple of 15.5 sporadically out there across the market. You mentioned this already. Auburn's not very good, but they're certainly much better than Tennessee. So how do you see this early kickoff in the state of Alabama?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I've downgraded Auburn significantly more than a touchdown since the start of the season, and so my number was closer to the opener here. I had it closer to 18. It's a good spot for Tennessee, I'll say that, coming off a bye. Sometimes I like the reset button with a first-year coach with that week off. They've showed some signs. They had turnover issues against Florida. That final doesn't look as bad as what it really was, and I thought they were fighting there in the second half. It was a 24-12 ball game against Georgia. So they've been decent. I wonder how much Auburn has left in the tank. I mean, offensively, cluster injuries on the offensive line. They were dominated at the line of scrimmage last week against Mississippi State. You know, their defense was on the field for nearly 42 minutes. And, again, you got a fresh Tennessee team. But sometimes you just got to play the numbers. And with it dropping down to 15, I'm going to lean on Auburn here. But don't say that with a lot of high confidence.
Well, that's a really good question about Auburn. I mean, when you look at teams that have certain expectations, that want to be in the college football playoff discussion, want to play in one of those, for lack of a better term, BCS types of bowl games, Auburn already has two losses. They play Texas A&M at home, they're at Georgia, and they're on the road for the Iron Bowl against an Alabama team that appears like they cannot be beaten this season. So if you're an Auburn Tigers player, or even a coach for that matter, What is the end game here for this season? What is the ultimate goal? I mean, the ultimate goal is winning the Iron Bowl and trying to screw over Alabama. That's pretty much it at this point. Maybe you want to play that game on the road in Athens against Georgia, but you know, Tennessee, Ole Miss, that Liberty game on the 17th, how invested are they going to be in any of those three games? I think it's a legitimate question.
Yeah. That's a great call. And look, Gus Malzahn doesn't have necessarily the big track record. He's got the big paycheck, 40 plus million. I'd like to have his agent. I mean, he just, you know, is fully taking advantage of a couple of big wins against Alabama and obviously a big win against Georgia last year. But my goodness, you want to talk about, you know, living off of what happened in those two games last year. Really, since then, lost the Georgia in the SEC title game, lost to UCF in the bowl game in a very disappointing start to this season. I don't know if there's been a team more disappointing in the last, you know, I would say 8 games than Auburn. And when you got questionable motivation and you're going on the road against two teams that probably won't have questionable motivation, in fact, they're going to have revenge and they're going to be have their eye towards the SEC title game and the national championship, I don't think this is going to be a good look. It's going to be a 4-5 loss season for Auburn, which has been the case for them for, you know, every single year pretty much under Gus Malzahn except this first one.
All right, one more game to break down in depth. I know I'm taking up a little bit more of your time here since we talked some NFL, so we'll do one more game in depth, then get into the pick six segment. Let's do game 197-198, Georgia and LSU, a couple of top 15 teams. And, you know, for LSU here, I mean, they're not a top 15 team in my power ratings anymore. I think they've kind of been a little bit smoke and mirrors this season. Maybe we see that this week with Georgia, an 8-point road favorite.
Yeah, it's historic because this is only the fourth time in the last 16 years LSU's been getting more than a touchdown at home. And the other three teams to do it were a pair of Alabama teams and Florida with Tim Tebow at quarterback. So I'm not sure Georgia's in the same class of those teams at this point. You know, I'm not a big Ed Orgeron fan, but at least we've seen LSU play some teams so far this season. They played 3 top 20 teams. I haven't seen Georgia. I mean, I get it. They played on the road against Missouri and South Carolina, but I don't think either one of those teams are top 20 material. So first big test for Georgia. I got more question marks on them than I do LSU. I'll take the home dog getting more than a touchdown here.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, it's one of those things too. for the life of me, I think you and I have talked about this before, and I've certainly talked about it with other people. Why the hell don't they schedule more night games in Baton Rouge? I mean, this is a perfect candidate. I know they want that CBS time slot, and that's fine. I mean, put Texas A&M and South Carolina in that CBS time slot. Give yourself a damn night game to where you've got a legitimate, and not to say they can't knock off Georgia, but I mean, we all know what Death Valley is like at night. Make this a 7:30 or an 8:30 game and then go to battle.
Great point. And, you know, historically speaking, I know we're talking against the spread, but let's just talk straight up difference between day and night in Baton Rouge history there at LSU Stadium. Night games, traditionally, LSU wins about 78% of the time straight up at home. Day games, it's like 55% of the time. And I get it sometimes. It's big competition. It's at 3:30 window or 2:30 their time on a CBS. But huge historical disparities between day and night as far as LSU home games go.
And, I mean, we're probably talking a point or a point and a half on the line in terms of home field advantage, too.
Yeah.
By playing the game at 7:30 or 8 instead of 3:30. But, you know, in any event, I don't know. They don't seem to do it. So, whatever. It's their own damn fault. All right, let's go through the pick six segment here. Six games, rapid-fire fashion. Let's start in the ACC game, 117-118. Miami's up to 6.5. There's even a stray 7 back out there now for this game against Virginia.
I lean on Virginia. I just like the spot. You got Virginia off a bye. Virginia, really, if you go back to last year's game, that was a game they're up 28-14. Somehow Miami with turnover chain scored the game's final 30 points in the third and fourth quarters in that one. Miami's off that thrilling come-from-behind win over Florida State. But, look, Nkosi Perry threw 4 touchdown passes, the Miami quarterback, but it's only 13 out of 32. I like the spot here for the Cavaliers. Give me them plus the points.
All right, let's talk about a couple of games that aren't going to get a whole lot of run on very many shows. I know you like to do these because this is the only show where you're going to get them. Game 149-150, New Mexico and Colorado State. This one's a pick'em pretty much market-wide.
Yeah, I just think New Mexico is the more trustworthy team, although both teams, Jekyll and Hyde, so far this season. You want to talk Jekyll and Hyde, how about the Colorado State's game against San Jose State last week and 28-0 at halftime? Entering the fourth quarter, they're down 30-28, and then end up winning by 12. Give me Bob Davey and the Lobos, though, here in a pick'em spot. They just win the game.
All right, let's slide down one spot. Game 151-152, Troy and Liberty. Liberty in a weird spot. Off back-to-back road games in New Mexico, Troy in a bad spot because quarterback Caleb Barker done for the year. First question, how much of an adjustment did you make to Troy? Second question, what do you think about this weekend's game?
Yeah, you know, I took it down about 4 points. I mean, you know, Caleb Barker's had a good, you know, start to the season. It's not like he's a multiple-year starter. And Troy at least still moved the football in the second half last week with him out. So about a 4-point down, you know, 3 to 4-point downgrade. For me, it's no bet. Although, you know, that sucks for Troy because I thought they really had things going there after losing to Boise State in the opener.
All right, how about game 175-176? West Virginia out on the road, laying 6.5. Another team like Memphis, as I talked about earlier, they've taken money just about every week this season. But the Mountaineers have a tough test out in Ames this week against Iowa State as a 6.5-point favorite.
Yeah, at night, Iowa State, who's played a much tougher schedule than West Virginia. Who in the hell has West Virginia played? I get a road trip to Texas Tech with a backup quarterback, but my goodness, Iowa State has played some teams. We're talking Oklahoma, TCU, Oklahoma State, Iowa. Even though, you know, Brock Purdy, they're going to play a third-string quarterback. I mean, he looked the part last week, threw for 300 yards. He's mobile, had 84 yards rushing. I like Matt Campbell as a head coach. Iowa State, one of my favorite plays of the week, plus 6.5.
Is this outright? Are you taking the Cyclones outright?
Yeah, I'm going to sprinkle in a little bit of money. I got the 6.5. I was hoping to get 7. I'm not sure it's ever going to get there, but I'll sprinkle a little bit of money on the Cyclones. I'm not buying it. It looks like Will Greer's forcing the issue. All the Heisman hypes. I mean, he's had a couple games with multiple interceptions, including last week, threw 3 interceptions in the red zone. I get it. That could be misleading, but to me, it looks like he's forcing the issue in there, and if they're missing a couple of scoring opportunities against Iowa State, unlike Kansas, is a team that's going to make it pay for it.
All right, 191-192, SEC East tilt here. Florida, Vanderbilt, Florida, a touchdown favorite in Nashville.
It's going to be my square play of the week. I like Florida. I know it's a bad spot off the LSU game, but they got a bye on deck. I can't trust Vanderbilt in these SEC games. In fact, they've only covered one of their last 10 SEC games. They look good early against the Middle Tennessees of the world and a lot of these Conference USA teams, but when they step up in class and conference, it's just not the same deal. You know that Nashville City is a destination city. If you're going to make one road trip a year, a lot of times Vanderbilt's got, I would say, one of the weaker home field advantages of any team in college football. Probably be a 50-50 crowd split. Florida hasn't lost at Vanderbilt since 1988. Give me the Gators minus the 7.
Yeah, there's virtually no home field advantage at Vanderbilt. And especially, too, I mean, you talk about a large fan base like Florida. I mean, yeah, they're going to travel up there. So Vanderbilt has no home field edge in this game pretty much whatsoever. One more game in the pick six segment here, 201-202, Michigan State, Penn State. The Nittany Lions laying 13.5 in Happy Valley.
Yeah, and normally I'd be all over Michigan State here. I mean, they're finally, they've been overrated all year, but this is the first time they've been a hot dog, and that's their preferred role. 16-5 against the spread last 21 games as a dog. They got a winning record as an underdog straight up, 11-10. That's incredible off that disappointing game against Northwestern. Usually I would say there's a play here, but I think the Nittany Lions off a bye, they can regroup. I think they can beat Michigan State's defense over the top. Michigan State still has the number one rush defense in the country, but I think McSorley will make them pay over the top. Slight lean on Penn State. Remarkable that I don't like Michigan State here.
I was kind of setting you up for that game because Michigan State, I mean, this is their role. Not just the underdog role, but playing up to a team that's clearly better than them. Not many people do it better than Mark D'Antonio. But this Michigan State team just does have that different feel to it. So, again, we'll see how that one goes in Happy Valley there on Saturday afternoon. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, I talk about it each and every week. It's my newsletter. And look, I mean, it's got everything that we go over on the show is in there, plus then some. Every single college game, you get a write-up and a projected score and my top picks of the week, not only in college football but the NFL. Top picks the last 5.5 weeks, 30-8, 30-8, 79%. But I'm telling you, don't buy it for the picks, buy it for the information. Again, write-ups on every single college and pro game. You get my power rings, my projected computer lines on every single game. You get the top trends of the week, all that and a heck of a lot more, and you get it all the way through the rest of the season. The price point, just $69. Go to BradPowerSports.com. And you can check out the newsletter. You can download all the past issues if you want to see what it's all about. You can do that for free. And then if you like what you see, sign up for the season.
That's at Brad Powers, the number 7. Brad, I know I kept you about an hour here today, but I love talking college football with you. Thank you so much for joining me, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Take care, my friend.
Great stuff there with professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. All right, going to wrap the show up here talking some Major League Baseball on today's program. NLCS is set, Brewers and Dodgers. ALCS is set, Yankees and Red Sox. Series prices also set out there in the marketplace. Going to grab these from BetOnline right now, give you the most prices that are out there. Dodgers minus 157, Astros minus 143. So this Astros number is moving around a little bit here. I'll start with the Dodgers and Brewers because this one starts on Friday night. Astros, Red Sox starting on Saturday night. Both of my previews available over at thebook.com, so make sure that you go ahead and check those out. First and foremost, I imagine a lot of people curious about what to do with their futures for these two respective series. We'll start with the Dodgers and the Brewers. If you've got a Dodgers future, let it ride. Let this one go. I know there's a perception out there about Clayton Kershaw, the game one starter who will take on Yulis Chacin. But you've got to let this one go with Clayton Kershaw. Dodgers are a minus 150 favorite for game one. You can get the Brewers at a better price for game two and beyond if the Dodgers take care of business here in game one. Now, if the Brewers do happen to win game one, I still do like the Dodgers for the series. I think the Dodgers series price probably swings to minus 120-ish, minus 120, minus 125, something like that. But the Brewers are going to face a lot of left-handed pitching in this series. That's been their weaker split over the course of the year. But the biggest thing for me is that Milwaukee's bullpen has worked a ton of innings. When you look at some of the workload statistics, things like Dr. Mike Soane's fatigue units, you've got a lot of red flags here for this Milwaukee Brewers bullpen. Furthermore, 7-game series, only 2 travel days. So you play 2 in Milwaukee, travel to Los Angeles, play 3 in LA, the 5th game if you need it, then back to Milwaukee if you need to for games 6 and 7. What that does for the Milwaukee Brewers is it makes it difficult for them to use Josh Hader a lot. Josh Hader did not pitch back-to-backs very often in the regular season. He did it maybe 5 or 6 times. Obviously, in the playoffs, there's a higher likelihood that Josh Hader does that. But the Dodgers, what do we know about the Dodgers? What do they do really well? They work counts. They build up pitcher workloads very significantly. So I think the bullpen attrition here in this series for the Brewers is their biggest downfall, because Milwaukee has a great bullpen, but that bullpen's going to get a lot of work here in this series. One of the things about the Dodgers that gets overlooked, especially when you talk about playoff time, is that they work a lot of counts, which means you turn the lineup over a lot faster. They draw a lot of walks. The analytics-based teams are paying a lot of attention to that third time through the order penalty. What does that mean for the Brewers? Well, it means that if they get 4, 4 2/3, something like that from a starter, it's going to be a big-time boost for them. They're going to be very happy to get 4 2/3 at a time from their starting pitchers here. They'll probably have a bullpen game or two at some point in this series as well. So I think the Brewers' attrition rate in the bullpen is just going to be way too high in this series. And the Dodgers don't have that same problem. You know, you've got Clayton Kershaw. Yes, he's had playoff problems, but he can work deep into games. You trust him. Hyunjin Ryu doesn't walk anybody. Good strikeout rate this year. Did battle some injury problems, but you can trust him to work deep into a game. Walker Buehler, maybe the best raw stuff of anybody on that Dodgers pitching staff. Maybe the best raw stuff outside of Josh Hader of any pitcher in this series. And you've also got Rich Hill, who did struggle in his cameo appearance in that series against the Braves. But another guy that you can get 4 or 5 solid innings out of him in all likelihood. So the problem I have for Milwaukee in this series is I think their pitching staff is just going to get so overworked. And it already is pretty overworked because they didn't get a whole lot of innings from the starters in the regular season. They relied heavily on the bullpen. They've played a lot of playoff-type games here lately with the playoff race for the wild card and the division. Now, the Dodgers have as well, but the Dodgers are a much deeper team from top to bottom. So depth is the big factor for me here in this series. Also, the Dodgers' offense has gotten much better. They were very, very good in the second half. The Brewers got better in the second half as well, but I trust the Dodgers a little bit more in the playoff run environment. They hit for a lot more power. They'll draw walks. Hits are less, you know, you get a lot less hits when it comes to the playoffs because, you know, teams defensively shift. You've got a lot more hard throwers that are out there, so you get weaker contact. But there is a correlation between playoff success and power. The Dodgers have more power than the Brewers in this series. They go on the road to Miller Park, which is a good hitting environment. So I do like the Dodgers here. And this is tough for me as somebody that has adopted the Brewers as a second team and as my National League team. But I just think that the Dodgers have a lot of things that don't match up really well for the Brewers here in this series. And when you think about the Cubs and the head-to-head battles between the Brewers and the Cubs, I know that they won game 163. The Brewers have had problems with the Cubs because the Cubs walk a lot. And the Cubs really only had offense this season when they drew walks. The Dodgers will draw walks. They will get traffic out there. And again, the Brewers are going to have some questions with how often they can deploy Josh Hader. Jeremy Jeffress looks like he's kind of running on fumes a little bit. I think the Dodgers are a fresher team, a deeper team. I think Dodgers in 6 or so here is the way that I would look. Again, if you've got a futures ticket on either one of these teams, with the Dodgers, I think you wait and you see how game 1 goes. I think they ultimately win the series. And again, a Dodgers World Series price, probably in the 5, 6, 7 to 1 range, something like that. There's very little hedging margin there because you will need to hedge in the World Series. So I think you have to let a Dodgers price ride here at least for a little while and see how this series sets up. If you've got a Brewers ticket, I would hedge immediately. If they lose game 1, they're probably, you know, you'll get the Dodgers minus 200 to win the series, I would say. So you have to hedge the Brewers right away in this spot. If the Brewers do win game 1, then, you know, you could maybe play on the other side of the Dodgers, something like that. But I think you have to hedge this one right away because I think the Dodgers are clearly the better team in this one. I think they do ultimately win this series. If it was a five-game series, maybe I'd feel a little bit better about Milwaukee with the two off days in the five-game series, more time to rest the bullpen, that luxury here in a seven-game series. So Dodgers for me in the senior circuit. Now in the junior circuit with Houston and Boston, this price is too low as far as I'm concerned. I think Houston is very clearly the best team in the American League and the best team in baseball. I think the Dodgers are the only team in Houston's stratosphere when it comes to being the best team in baseball. You look at this healthy Houston team. You look at what they've done since Jose Altuve came back off the DL. Jose Altuve missed about a month. It was about July 25th to August 21st. Since the August 21st return of Jose Altuve, Houston is 28-8. Carlos Correa has been banged up. George Springer was dinged a little bit earlier on in the season. You know, they had some pitching attrition where they had a few bullpen guys kind of in and out. You had Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander sort of coming back to earth just a little bit. But over the course of the season, I thought Houston was the best team in baseball. I still believe that right now going into this series. I think Houston is the play in this series. Again, they're about minus 143 or so out there. I think that price is a little bit too low. If Chris Sale was 100%, if you had Chris Sale in full-on game conditions, maybe this price is a little bit lower. Maybe my thought process changes a little bit. But with Chris Sale pitching into the sixth in the division series for the first time since July, very concerned about that. He cannot pitch three times on short rest. He cannot pitch three times in this series, twice on short rest. He'll pitch game one. He'll pitch game five. But, you know, he's still not the same guy, not the same velocity, not as sharp. The command's not as sharp. And that's the one thing that Boston had going for them is that Chris Sale's a guy that can match up against Justin Verlander, can match up against Gerrit Cole, can meet that elite level that Houston's pitching staff is. The Houston pitching staff was very clearly the best in baseball this season. From a WAR standpoint, ERA, FIP, xFIP, strikeout rate, they were clearly the best pitching staff in baseball, and it really wasn't that close. That's an important thing to consider here for this series is that, yes, Boston was the best offense in baseball from a weighted on base average standpoint, best offense in baseball against right-handed pitching, highest average exit velocity against right-handed pitching by a pretty decent margin over the Toronto Blue Jays, but they're facing an elite pitching staff now. And Houston brings everybody out, throw a 95, 96, 97 gas. Keuchel, a little bit different of a guy there. He doesn't throw as hard, but the Red Sox had problems in that split against lefties. So Keuchel's a guy that can have success in this series. I like Houston. And when you look at Boston, when you look at the full body of work here, they had a good regular season. But also, Boston was plus +9 in base runs record. They played more like a 99-63 team in a context-neutral environment. So they did very, very well in high-leverage situations, both offensively and defensively. That's something I think kind of rears its head a little bit when you face an elite-level pitching staff and an elite-level offense like Houston. You know, the Yankees were a solid team, but they were a flawed team. The other three teams in the AL East, Baltimore was horrible. Toronto wasn't very good. The Rays were solid, very solid team, but they didn't hit very well. They pitched very well, didn't hit very well. So Boston's pitching staff, which I think is weak. I think it's certainly weaker than Houston's, now faces a very difficult assignment. You know, David Price, say what you will about small sample sizes in the playoffs, and I try to caution against this with Clayton Kershaw, but David Price has not been good in the playoffs. He's your number two guy going up against Gerrit Cole. That's a tough spot for you to be in. You know, you've got Rick Porcello. You've got Eduardo Rodriguez. You've got Nate Eovaldi. These are middle-of-the-rotation types of guys. Houston has, you know, two and three starters after Cole and Verlander. They have two number ones. And then two and three guys after that with Keuchel and Morton. The Red Sox have one number one in Sale, and he's not even really a number one right now. A three in Price, and then a four and five type guys in Porcello, Eovaldi, and Rodriguez. So just on that alone, Houston has the better starting rotation. They very clearly have the better bullpen. There's no question about that. Yeah, it's interesting that Alex Cora was Houston's bench coach last year, and Alex Cora did a phenomenal job managing the division series, but Houston's just too talented They're too good of a team. I like Houston in this series. If you have a Boston future, I would hedge it right away at the start of the series. If you've got a Houston future, I think you have to let it ride. Houston and Boston, both favorites over the Brewers in the World Series. Houston favorite over the Dodgers. Dodgers favorite over Boston, I think, even though Boston would have home field advantage there, I would still favor the Dodgers in that spot. So if you're looking ahead at possible matchups, that's how you want to look at it. But I think that both favorites in this in these two series move on. I think both favorites are lightly priced out there in the marketplace as well. So I do like a rematch of the 2017 World Series between Houston and the Dodgers. We'll see if that comes to fruition. I'll be doing my picks and analysis piece each day for this series. So you'll be able to check that out over at bangthebook.com. If you have any additional questions about the ALCS, the NLCS, hedging futures, stuff like that, Adam at bangthebook.com or at Skating Tripods on Twitter. We got one more show left for this week of Bang the Book Radio. That is our Friday edition with our Westgate Super Contest selection segment. My Bang the Book podcast entry needs to get it going here, to say the least. Hopefully things go a little bit better here in week six. Then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook, this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.